He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the 73rd hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you to recap the BMW Championship U.S. Open that took place this past weekend at Olympia Fields. John Rahm over Dustin Johnson. And really, the tournament concluded in pretty boring fashion. It was just very so-so down the stretch. No drama whatsoever. That was last week at TPC Boston. This week was the exact opposite, where DJ makes birdie on 18 in regulation with a 43-footer up and over the ridge down the hill right in the heart to send it to a playoff. And then John Rahm, on a similar line from 66 feet on the first playoff hole, rams it right in the middle to win and take down Dustin Johnson. It was a very good week for me, Taylor, as if those of you who listened to our podcast last week, our preview for the tournament, I did have a little coin on John Rahm. So it was a good week. I was happy to see him take it down. And John Rahm now has won at the Memorial and at the BMW Championship, which are the two toughest conditions that we've seen golf courses play in all season on the PGA Tour. So I think John Rahm, and also this is his first multi-win season, and he did it at the two toughest tracks of the year. That's saying something about the state of John Rahm's game.
That is. It really is. And, you know, Rahm has always gotten kind of since he's been out, the criticism of, you know, he's done well in majors, but some of them he'll do bad. A lot of people blame it on his temperament and how he handles himself on the course. And in majors, you have to be a little bit more level-headed because things aren't going to go your way. But we've seen over, like you mentioned, at the Memorial and then at this week, the U.S. Open BMW Championship, which I find it fairly interesting that 17 years ago when they had the U.S. Open here, Furyk won at 8-under, and second place was 5-under, and then 4-under was what won this tournament. And, I mean, for comparison's sake, T3 that year was 1-under, and then T5 was even. So, I mean, it was fairly comparable conditions as to what it was this week compared to what it was for a U.S. Open setup.
But this week, you didn't have the USGA trying to make it into some sort of dinosaur putt-putt adventure golf.
Exactly, yeah. It was more, from what we saw, it was definitely fair. It wasn't one of those, you know, you had putts rolling off the green, or you had just horrible breaks going over there for everyone. And when we brought it up to Colby earlier in our preview show, we saw the excitement coming down the stretch. It took a 4-putt on the last hole to get your man Billy Horschel, because he screwed me over real bad a few years ago. But nevertheless, he got in number 30th spot by 2.7 FedEx points.
Yes, over Adam Long. And the reason that he got in is because Corey Connors 4-putted 18, 3 swipe from 5 feet, which dropped Corey Connors from a T33 to a T34 with Billy Horschel. And so that allowed Billy Horschel to get just a few more points and get in. So the two movers, there were only two guys who were outside who came in. So obviously they had to take two spots. So Joaquin Neiman obviously had a great tournament, finished T3. Joaquin Neiman moved in, and he moved all the way up to 18th. And then Billy Horschel moved from out to in as well, and he took Kevin Streelman's spot. So Adam Long and Kevin Streelman are the two who got bounced from the top 30. So they will not be participating in the Tour Championship this coming Friday at Eastlake. I want to remind everyone, it is this Friday, not this Thursday. It's a Friday to Monday Labor Day finish for the Tour Championship. So don't turn your TV on Thursday and expect to see golf. It will not be there. But yeah, only two movers from outside to in, which, you know, not the most volatility in the world, but there was definitely still the drama as, you know, 30th was decided on that 4-putt by Corey Connors. Matthew Wolff did not make his way in. Victor Hovland is in. Taylor Gooch, I know it wasn't the week that he was hoping for. He ends up finishing 60th in the FedEx Cup race, which will still net him a nice fat bonus check. So basically, I was looking at last year's payouts. Everyone in the top 150 gets a nice fat bonus check, which is weird because only 125 make the playoffs. But last year, everybody from 126 to 150 got an extra $70,000 as a bonus, and it just works its way up from there, from 31 to 125. It's kind of a sliding scale for how much of a bonus these guys get. So even the guys who don't make it to Eastlake will still be getting a nice little direct deposit hitting the bank account. But big deal for Billy Horschel to get in, a place where he's won in 2014. Billy Horschel in 2014 goes into the playoffs, and he's at 82nd, before he gets a runner-up finish to get himself into the Tour Championship and then wins the Tour Championship to take home the $10 million and all that good stuff. So, yeah, really good stuff for Billy Horschel, but a great tournament. Let's get to the playoff. John Rahm, Dustin Johnson. I mean, that's two of the elites in the game.
What definitionally, one and two in the world.
One and two in the world. And what does it say to you about Dustin Johnson's game that he can win one week running away from the field on an easy course and shoot 30 under, and the very next week get himself into a playoff at the toughest track of the entire year at 4 under? What does that say about the versatility of Dustin Johnson's game?
Well, and we had talked about it earlier in the year because he's switching putters every week, it seemed like. One week he's shooting back-to-back 80s, and then next week he does it again, withdraws for a quote-unquote injury of some sort. And then all of a sudden he comes out, he won the Travelers, and then he finished then he had a little bit of stretch. Then he finished 12th at FedEx, and all of a sudden he finished 2nd at the PGA where he had the solo lead. So maybe, in all honesty, maybe DJ kind of used that as a kickstarter to kind of get this run going. And that may have been what got kind of getting this fuel in his system, because we had seen that a couple times throughout DJ's career where he had in some of his worser finishes, he was able to come back. Like, for example, I know he didn't win it both times, but like in 2010 at the U.S. Open, he faltered down the stretch at Pebble, but then later on in 2010 he still had a chance at Whistling Straits on Sunday if he hadn't grounded his club in the waste bunker, whatever the hell they want to call it. So for me on DJ, we talk about it with him and Rory, and maybe even with how Rahm played this weekend. Rahm's only bogey on the weekend was his F up whenever he picked his ball up without marking it point.
If you are watching, John Rahm, so he walked up to the green and he fixed his divot. So he fixed his divot, which was near his ball. So maybe in his brain, somehow it computed that he'd already put something down on the green. So he fixes his divot and then he takes a step and then he picks his ball up and he didn't mark it. And his caddy was like, leave your foot there. Leave your foot there. I know where it was. Leave your foot there. They call the rules officially and they get it all worked out. It's a one-stroke penalty for John Rahm, because on Saturday, when I think he still shot 66.
He did. That was his Saturday. only bogey the last 36
only
holes.
Only bogey of the weekend.
And it was 5 or 6 when it happened.
It was early in the round.
It was pretty early in the round, yeah. So, and I can't remember if it was after Saturday or after yesterday when he was talking about it, but he made a 6-footer for bogey, and he said he used that for momentum. And the way I look at it is, because I've heard people, and I even thought about it when it happened, it's like, oh man, Rahm's going to look back and kick himself because he had a stupid one-stroke penalty, and at the end of the day, he could have won by one instead of losing in a playoff. And really, I've never been one of those type of guys because, for example, had he made, just made a simple par there, yes, his score may have been one better, but he might not have had the momentum and the energy of two putting after doing a stupid mistake like that, because that's just how the subconscious and the mind works. And so I don't think if Rahm would have lost the playoff, we would have looked back on it and pointed that out to be the figure. But, I mean, we see it all the time in sports. I mean, you have one possession here, one possession there. A ball bounces in the water here, bounces over a bunker. It can change the whole momentum of the round, of the tournament, of the season even. I mean, we saw it, 2.7 points dictate who got to East Lake and who didn't. So, I mean, one bounce here, one bounce there makes all the difference. But, you know, really going back to DJ, I think that he's been such a hit or miss player, especially this year. But now that he's hitting, he looks a lot closer to his 2016 form, or 2015, or 2017.
No,
2017.
It was late 2016 into early 2017, because that was the year that he was going into Augusta, and everyone basically thought it was a foregone conclusion that as well as DJ was playing, he was going to win the Masters. And then he slipped on stairs, allegedly, and hurt his back. So do you think he's close to that form? I mean, do you think we're seeing close to late 2016, early 2017, DJ?
I think the form is there. I think the question is, how long will the form stay?
Is it sustainable?
You know, because, I mean, we've seen, Day's kind of gotten his game back, but he was finished like 65th or something this last week. So you saw him, even though he was getting it back, he was inconsistent. He was winning how many ever tournaments? Spieth, obviously, was up at the top. And we keep seeing, seems like number one in the world keeps changing every week now. And so for me on DJ, it is, right now he has the form, and I think he's going to ride it as long as he can. But how long does he stay on the train? Does it halt? Does it stop off? at the end of this year after he's played the Masters and the U.S. Open? Does he keep it going into 2021 for those next few seasons? Hell, does he keep doing it for the next 5 years? Does he come out this next week and shoot 30 over? Because I believe last year, I don't think he was very high in the FedEx Cup points anywhere, but I know he finished close to last at East Lake here last year. So I don't know, you know.
DJ?
Yeah,
DJ. Yeah, he finished T29, which was DFL alongside Lucas Glover, and a T29 only netted him 400K last year.
Oh, no, poor guy. Can you imagine I finished last in the tournament and get 400K? That's not a bad deal. That's why getting it at 30 to 31 is such a freaking...
It's a big deal.
2.7... I can't get over the fact that... And for some, it's out of his control. Another person's four putt it's just
the points for the whole season. That's just
it's so flabbergasted to me.
By the way, 31st place, which is where Adam Long sits, last year was a $200,000 bonus. So Corey Connors
still very nice, but that's 400. That's twice as much. I mean $200,000 difference.
Yeah, that's $200K difference because of Corey Connors' four putt. So obviously we're not trying to pick on Corey Connors. He wasn't trying to four putt. He lipped out the second putt. He hard lipped out the third putt. But if you're Adam Long and you go back and you watch those putts lip out, I mean, you see the first lip out, there goes $100K, and then the second lip out, there goes another $100K. I mean, that'll turn your stomach for sure.
And I was looking.
And that's if he comes in DFL. If he finishes better than DFL, he could. I mean, it might have cost him a million.
Exactly. You're exactly right. Hell, he could have went out and won the tournament.
Yeah. Ten shots back with four rounds to go. How far back was Rahm through 36? I know he shot five over in round one. I think he was seven back through two rounds.
Exactly. Yeah. That's nothing. And so for me, I think that, you know, just with how close everything is, and like you said, with it being double the amount and of Adam Long not being able to get in. But I went back and looked on it, and like I was telling you before the show started, Colby, he birdied three of his last five holes. So for him, he probably felt like, oh, I played really well, and I might have, you know, sustained this, because I believe he was 27th or 28th or something last week going into this. And so for him to finish strong like that was really promising, but to see another player go out and do that and end up being what messes you up. And then obviously for Adam Long, he's probably more looking at the fact of, you know, he might have been able to make a putt here or there during the week, or even a tournament back in November, make one more stroke, and that's all the difference. And it just shows how fickle this game is and how fine of a line it is. And you know, and we'll talk a lot more about it on our preview show coming up on Wednesday, because, you know, this is the second year of the Tour Championship having the format of you're starting off with a score or a particular score. For example, DJ's going to be 10 under starting the tournament, while the guys 26th through 30th will be starting the tournament at even par. And I believe listening to Rory's post-round interview yesterday, he was mentioning that it felt weird. A lot of the players even talked about how it felt weird starting a tournament with a preset score, with not everyone being on the same playing field. And I think for a lot of those players, it was an adjustment period thing, because, like, for example, Thomas last year and DJ this year, they're going out with a 2-shot lead. They didn't even hit a shot. And it's kind of, you know, it's a unique feeling.
You know, I think you have to treat it like mentally. I think you have to treat it like whenever you go into a round on Friday. Because whenever you go into a round on Friday, I mean, if Justin Thomas went in on Friday and he was three back after round one, he wouldn't think anything of it. I mean, you're right in the tournament, you have a great chance to win, you're all good to go. If DJ had a 2-shot lead after one round of a tournament, it's not like DJ's going to think that he has the tournament wrapped up. So I think that mentally, you have to tell yourself, okay, yes, this is the start of the tournament. I'm starting at 10 under, I'm starting at 5 under, whatever the case may be, but there's a lot of golf left. This is no different than if at any other point in any other tournament I were to you know, go out and be a little bit further behind. Even on a Thursday, if you tee off in the afternoon wave and a guy goes out in the morning and shoots 8 under, well, technically you've got 72 holes left and you're 8 back. Now, the other guy's only got 54 left, so that's a little bit different still. But, I mean, unless DJ just goes out and absolutely lights it up like he did at Boston, then there are still going to be, I think, I mean, again, there's four rounds. I think there's probably 20 guys who can win this tournament and 10 that I think probably couldn't.
Yeah, and I mean, even it's like Rory said, what his, because he won the tournament last year and won the FedEx Cup, and he was talking about how his goal going into the week was just to shoot the lowest score out of the other 29 players in the field. He just said, I shoot the best, and then at the end of the day, if one of the guys was a few strokes ahead of me to start and I beat them by one or two, but they started three or four ahead of me, so be it. But his goal was to shoot the lowest of all the 30 players, and I think that is, along with your mindset, Colby, I think you have to have the mindset of just go out there and just play golf. You know, and just like everyone we've had on, Steve Ballring, Gibson, you know, just play a hole, play a shot at a time, think about the process. And I think for a lot of these guys, there's a few newcomers to East Lake this year than last year. So I think that it'll be an advantage for East Lake. Has been a course traditionally too, where people that have played it a lot have had pretty decent success there. So I think that these people who are first timers and obviously starting out with a score, I think it'll be a little different for them because, for example, some of these guys down here at even par, and who are, like, for example, Victor Hovland, is he going to have to feel like he's chasing to get out there to get out to a 10 under where DJ was? Because he just saw that he shot 30 under 2 weeks ago, then last week won or lost in a playoff in a solo second. So what are these guys down at the bottom who didn't play in this tournament last year? How are they feeling not knowing how the scoring gap can really, in all honesty, it'll make a little bit of difference at the end of the week for sure. But really, the person who plays the best is probably going to win the tournament.
Yeah, more than likely. Unless, you know, if DJ wins by one shot and the guy he beats is Rom, then maybe we'll look at it and say, okay, that had a pretty big impact. But otherwise, I don't think we'll be looking at it that way.
Or you have someone like Rory starting at 3 under.
Yes.
And then DJ's at 10 under. So let's say Rory loses by 2 or 3.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
Yeah. Obviously it would have an impact. And the reason they did it, if you remember, is to just kind of simplify everything because, you know, whenever we'd be watching and we'd have, well, this guy could win the Tour Championship, but this guy would win the FedEx Cup playoffs. And, you know, this amount of prize money would go here and this amount of prize money would go here. And it was like you had to have an algorithm to figure out who was where. And now you don't need an algorithm. You have a leaderboard. They changed it. And I'll be honest, I don't know what you think. I kind of like the new way better than the old way. I mean, there's still 72 holes left. You've got plenty of time to make up ground if you're one of the guys behind. DJ is being rewarded for a season-long, work of excellence. So I prefer the new way to the old way, personally.
And I'll throw counter-argument out there against you, Cole, because like you mentioned, while DJ was a little bit off and on throughout the year, he still had a really great year, and obviously he's played well these last couple FedEx points events. The reason I don't like the switch is because it is now straight up, whoever wins this tournament wins the FedEx Cup. And for me, that's not really rewarding a season-long success. You know what I'm saying?
But that's where the starting scores come into place. Like, Victor Hovland has to start at even, so he's 10 shots back of DJ because DJ had a better season than he did. I mean, that's a big advantage for the guys who were much further back from DJ. Okay. And then the guys who were close, like Rom and JT, they only start a few shots back. So I think that I kind of like the system.
This is kind of my point with it. I mean, you look down here, and I understand the point of having the course over, giving someone like DJ 10 under another guy's 4, 3, 2, 1, and making them even. So be it. But like we just mentioned, there's 72 holes of golf, and I mean, Rom made up 7 shots in 2 rounds. So you can double that, 14 shots. One of these guys at even par could easily go out and win this tournament. And, I mean, you have someone like Hovland, who's had a great season, but his only win was at Puerto Rico. So if he comes out and wins a Tour Championship, does he really deserve to win the FedEx Cup? In my opinion, no. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, if he comes from 10 behind, I mean, it's like, I look at the 07-08 New York Giants. Did the 07-08 New York Giants deserve to win the Super Bowl? Probably not, but they got super hot at the right time.
Well, but they got hot for four games because of the wild card.
They won more than half as many games in the playoffs than they won in the regular season, and nobody complains about them being Super Bowl champions and saying we need to change the system.
But this is where I throw the counter argument at you is that if you wanted it, kind of like what they did before, where they would reset the points from one to 125, reset them, and then have the last three, or at the time, 4 events, very similar to the Giants, 4 games to evaluate from there. They didn't just play one game and say, oh, hey, you're the Super Bowl champion. They had to play 4 games or 3 other games to get to there. And in this situation, you're throwing 30 guys in the field with some having a stroke higher over than the other. And it's just going out for 4 rounds of golf to dictate who wins $15 million.
So would you prefer, let me ask you this then, did you prefer the old method or would you rather them play the full season and then prior to the Northern Trust, they award the $10 million bonus and then play the playoffs and have another bonus for just the guy who wins the playoffs?
That would be an interesting strategy. I think
I'm just trying to figure out what system you prefer.
This is how I would phrase it. the system they had previously was flawed just because of, like you said, it's while like I said, you needed an algorithm to figure it out, but
it was too complicated for the viewer on Sunday.
For the majority of the viewers, it was complicated. And because, like I said, I mean, one putt, like just with Corey Connors, one putt here, one putt there dictated who you,
I mean, even 2 years ago, you remember Tiger and Justin Rose coming down the stretch?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Rose was in front of Tiger and we were watching him to see if he made bogey, because if Rose would have bogeyed 18, then if Tiger would have come in and done what he did, then not only would he have won the Tour Championship, he also would have won the FedEx Cup.
Absolutely. And I think it was the second or third year of the FedEx Cup where Phil won the Tour Championship and Tiger won the FedEx Cup.
Yes.
And so they were standing up there both holding trophies.
Yeah, was that in 09?
I believe it was 09. Yeah,
it was 09, yeah.
And like I said, for me, it's... The FedEx Cup is a season-long thing, is supposed to be a season-long deal, and I mean, we're seeing it. Like, for example, a lot of these guys in here, like Brendan Todd's been playing pretty decent recently, but all of his points came from winning the two events in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then we got guys like Munoz played good last week, but he won his event back in the fall. Lanto Griffin played a lot in the fall. So these guys are getting in based off what they did back there. And so this is a season-long type of thing.
Let me make a counter-argument here, because you pointed out Victor Hovland starting 10 shots back could very well win the tournament with a great week, but his only wins at Puerto Rico, right? So 2 years ago with Tiger had zero wins on the season coming into East Lake, and even with the old format, all it would have taken was a Justin Rose bogey at 18, and Tiger would have been the winner of the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. So he was still just that close to winning them both with zero wins on the season prior going in. So there's still the situation at East Lake, even under the old format, where somebody who hasn't won all year did just enough to get into East Lake could still win that tournament. And because the points are so elevated, they could still win that and the FedEx Cup. It just isn't a certainty like it is now. Now it comes down to this week. But that's also kind of why I like it as a viewer. And maybe I could see the argument, maybe it's less fair to the guys at the top of the leaderboard who've been great all season. But as a viewer, I like it kind of being like the Super Bowl or Game 7 of the NBA Finals, where you've got this huge, massive purse, this huge, massive amount of money at the end, and they all go out and duke it out for 4 days, and whoever's on the top of the leaderboard at 4 days, you get all the cash. You get both the titles, Tour Championship and FedEx Cup. There's just so much on the line for this one event, and I think golf needs more of that, because I think part of what golf loses throughout the season for the regular tour stops are some of the casual fans, because there's not enough at stake.
Yeah, and you know, a couple points here. One, we hear about it a lot, us being college football fans, of you know, them trying to delude the regular season schedule, you know, to make it easier to get to the postseason. And, you know, people are talking about, you know, do you have conference championships games, you know, whatever it may be. And, you know, so there's a lot of talk about diluting the regular season there, and you want the regular season to matter there. So when I look at it from a golf standpoint, I want that to be the same in that aspect, where I want the regular season and the events to matter, because in my opinion, what that will do is that will draw more better players to some of these smaller events, because they know that they have to play more events. If some of these guys are playing 30 events and getting FedEx Cup points, and someone like Tiger or Cantlay this year, because the fall, play like 8 tournaments.
Yeah, like for example, this week was Lanto, the BMW was Lanto Griffin's 26th event. It was Tiger's 7th event.
And the COVID stuff obviously played a huge part in this, but the principle is still the same, of that, you know, you're getting rewarded for a long season. And I understand you're playing more events, but I think, because you talk about all the drama for the Tour Championship, but I think that if you made the regular season more impactful, you'd get some of the bigger names to the tournaments. I mean, right now it's not necessarily such a big deal because there's no fans there, and so there's not, you know, you're not drawing the crowds in for the town, for the community to get money drawn in. Because, for example, I mean, obviously Tiger's the most polarizing name, but, I mean, if Rory goes and plays one of these smaller tournaments that he normally doesn't play because he feels like that the regular season is more impactful, well, how many more people are going to go watch that tournament or drive?
If Rory goes and plays Mayakoba, then, you know, that's going to be a lot different than what we're used to.
Exactly. And obviously, I did not like the old system, because I remember two specific situations. One, I remember in 2008, VJ won both of the – this is back when they had 4 events, too. VJ won the first 2 playoff events, and he had secured the FedEx Cup after that.
Right.
And so, literally, all he had to do was finish 4 rounds of the Tour Championship, and he had won. So, there was no drama there. So, do I think there needs to be something different there? Yes, I don't think that... I mean, because, like, for example, Tiger in, like, in 2000 or whatever, he would have had the FedEx Cup sewn up by the 2000 U.S. Open. Yeah. So then there wouldn't have been any drama, but he would have won it anyway. And then, like you mentioned, the Tiger thing in 2018, I remember one year where, because they switched it up to where it was like, if you're in the top five of the FedEx Cup points going to East Lake and you win, you automatically win the FedEx yes. Cup, no matter what the other people do. Yeah,
that's still how it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and I remember Louis had snuck into fifth place, and he had not won a tournament all year, very similar to Tiger. Yep. And actually, I know we're Tiger fans, but in my opinion, did not have as good a year as Tiger had in 2018 because he finished second in the PGA and Valspar and played good in other tournaments.
Open Championship. Kind of
thing. Yeah. Open Championship. Exactly.
Frankie, yeah.
Yeah, and so Louis hadn't won a tournament all year, and just because he was fifth in the FedEx points, he could have won it all if he had won East Lake, no matter what anyone else did. So for me, I think both systems are flawed in a sense. If I had to pick one, it would honestly be tough which one I choose, because I like what you say, Colby, about it brings so much drama to the event and it puts a lot of pressure on those guys, because those guys got put for $15 million. That's nothing yeah. to cry about.
I don't care how much. I mean, even these guys at the top who have money, I mean real money, you get nervous standing over a putt for $15 million.
Hell, I think Warren Buffett get nervous over a $15 million.
$15 million is $15 million. I don't That's care what I'm who saying. You are. That's and a lot of money.
We say $15 million. It's a lot of the bread. Guy who finished second, we get what, $5 million or whatever.
True. So it's more like a $5 million putt.
Yeah, but still at the same time, yeah.
But still, $5 million putt.
Would you rather make it or miss it? You know what I'm saying.
But basically, I don't think there is. Certainly, I don't have an idea for a perfect system. I like what's in place.
I think, and I think once because. Because of the way the schedule's worked out with COVID, we'll be able to go into the fall and the winter with a lot more golf content than we were planning on having. But I think that eventually we could have a show or maybe even a segment where, you know, maybe I sit down or you sit down, we'll sit down for an hour or two, and it might take a little longer than that. But I think we could come up with a better system than what they have right now. Maybe something that I think it'd be a lot of structure would have to change. I think maybe how you differentiate the points from the majors, from the regular events, how many points go to the winners, to the second, to the thirds. I mean, I think there'd be a lot of things that need to be broken down here. I think both systems have been flawed so far. And it's just a matter of, like I said, this week will be extremely entertaining. It's just, I think that needs to be a few tweaks, very similar to what the rules of golf did in 2019. They tweaked the rules, and some of them were better, some of them weren't. So did it really benefit golf a lot? Not really. That's kind of how I feel like this change was. And so, very similar to the rules of golf, I think that there's so much room for improvement that I think that it's just there. It's just a matter of kind of figuring out what the perfect recipe is. But you don't figure out the perfect recipe without trying it. You have to experiment. You have to hypothesize. So maybe they try this and the viewer ratings are awesome and everyone loves it and it's fantastic and they keep rolling with it because that's really what matters. But I just think that there's a little bit better system out there that could be in place besides playing 50-something events throughout the year or 40-something events throughout the year and then having it all come down to one event with getting over 72 holes, a maximum 10-stroke difference over the guy who played the best in the year and the guy like Billy Horschel who had a pretty good year but barely snuck in because the guy four-putted at the previous tournament.
Yep, I understand what you're saying. Let's do this. Let's take a break. Let's come back on the other side and we'll talk about a lot more from the BMW Championship. We'll look at some of our picks, some of the bets. I was in another pool that I totally forgot about that I won with John Rahm. We'll give a tiny, very short update on how Taylor and I fared in our two-man tournament. A very, very short update on how we fared in the two-man.
Very, very small. Very, yeah, very.
Very short update on how that went, as it was just an absolute blast. And we'll also talk about the soon-to-be number one dad on the PGA Tour. That's all coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd Hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof. It is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcrayroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole, Colby Powell and Taylor Williams. Glad to be back after the BMW Championship. And we now have a long break from golf because we don't get golf on Thursday. We get golf on Friday. Taylor, I like the Monday Labor Day finish, but it's always weird when you go Friday to Monday because it's outside of our normal routine.
Well, you wake up Thursday and you turn on the TV and you say, all right, I'm going to watch the golf. Or you're going to watch PGA Tour at least, and you watch Tour Championship, and you turn it on, and there's nothing there. And where's it at? What channel is this on? Where's it at? And then you look at your watch, and you say, is it Wednesday? Is it Tuesday? What day of the week is it? It's Thursday. There's supposed to be golf, and there's no golf. And
yeah, then, anytime there's a Monday finish, it screws me up on my days.
Oh, it's so bad. Well, and then even on the Monday, I know it's Labor Day, but at the same time, it's still weird to have a Monday finish because most of the time it's because either it rained or back in the day it was the 18-hole U.S. Open playoff, which I wish they still had, but that's another take for another story. But
yeah, and if you're like me and your wife gets Monday off for Labor Day, then she's really going to hate that she has to watch golf on a weekday that she's not working. So it's just a whole thing.
Yeah, you got to deal with that, but you'll get around it. Just
who knows? DJ might be up by 14 at that time.
He might not need to watch. He might just run away with it like he did at the Deutsche Bank. But
the Northern Trust.
No, gosh dang, I did it again. That's like my eighth time.
They're playing it at TPC Boston, but it is now the Northern Trust.
Deutsche Bank I don't even know if they're still around.
Deutsche Bank probably loves the free promotion here.
They do.
They're getting every single time we bring up that tournament. You call it the Deutsche Bank.
When you do something for 20 years or whatever, then you change it. It's the routine thing. We were supposed to play on Thursday.
Creatures of habit.
Exactly. We're
creatures of habit.
There's no doubt about that. But, man, Colby, let's talk about this playoff. Or maybe more or less how it got to a playoff. Freaking DJ. So me and my dad, we're rewatching it last night because you and me were playing tournament. We'll get to that later in the show.
But we were playing, so we just have to keep updating the phone because I had 20 on Rom at 10-1. Your dad had like $11 on Rom because he'd won a basketball bet. He had like $11 on Rom at 10-1, something like that. And so we were just updating the phone while you and I were playing our tournament. And after the 17th hole, me and your dad talk, and we're both like, okay, we should be good. 18 is a brute. I mean, it's a beast. And DJ has to birdie it or Rom's got it. So we felt pretty good. DJ makes birdie at 18.
So what had happened too is because we're watching, and I was telling my dad, I was like, because he came out and watched our atrocity that we played, and I'm like, it's probably better you came out and watched this because you would have had a heart attack watching this because DJ hits it right on 18 into the rough, and the pin's front right. He has no shot, no chance to get close to the green. Hits a fabulous shot, lands short of the green, rolls 43 feet past on the, has to hit over the ridge. And you're like, there's no chance he can make this putt. And this is how you know a golf tournament is an exhilarating finish. When you know what's going to happen and you still get excited when you see it. Like when I was watching it last night, I saw DJ make that putt, I jumped out of my chair. I knew it was going in and I still jumped out. And then even later on in the playoff, and this is one of the funnier things too about it, because the playoff started, Rom hit it fairly similar to where DJ hit it on 18 in regulation, kind of over in the right rough. DJ hooks the hell out of it, or pulls it, and hits a tree, bounces back about 30 yards, but it's right in the middle of the fairway. I mean, dead smack right in the middle of the fairway. Has 180 yards in, hits a pretty good shot, pin high, 23 feet or whatever it is. Rom's over there, hits a worse shot than DJ did coming in. And from what it looked like to me, Rom was back there on that green, and obviously, Azinger said on the call, he said it would be the best two-putt of his life. That's what he said right before he hit this putt. For anyone who wasn't watching, best two-putt of his life. And he hits it, and it was on. He was on a different line than DJ was in regulation for the
43. He wasn't as far up the green.
Yes, but whenever the ball came over the slope, it was in a very similar spot because once it gets into that bowl, it kind of funnels. And so what I noticed was that Rom, after he hit the putt, he was running over to the left because he wanted to watch the putt once it went by the hole, how it broke. He ran over to look at it and say, okay, this putt's going past, because you can see he was standing up straight and he was looking at it. Then all of a sudden, about 5 feet away from the hole, he starts moving. He's like, oh shit, this thing, because it took a left turn glide and it started to go in. He's like, oh shit, this might go in. And all of a sudden, boom, I mean, it's right there. And
Rahm has a flair for the dramatic on the 18th, if you'll remember back at Farmers, whenever he made the putt to win.
They brought that up right before he hit the putt. He's like, yeah, I can just think back to, I can't remember who was on the call, just said, like, I can just remember back at Torrey when he made that long putt, and all of a sudden, here you go. Boom, right there. And, you know, we mentioned briefly earlier the rules of golf because we were comparing that to the FedEx Cup points. In your opinion, and obviously I know the rules are, do you think both those putts would have went in had they tended the flag or the flag been out?
Oh, that's a good question. I say yes because they were both dead center. They were both center cut.
Well, I had a putt dead center in the tournament yesterday and didn't go in the hole. So, and it might have been going slower than Rahm's was.
Yeah, and the one that you hit probably would have gone in with the flag in, but I think that because... And look, the course in Marlow is in really good shape. Don't get me wrong. But because on the PGA Tour, they have such crisp cups and they've got, you know, firm backs on them and everything. Whereas you play in a small town in Oklahoma, you're probably going to have a little bit rounded edges on the cups. So if you hit one dead center with moving too much pace and you've got that nice firm wall on the back, it's a better chance to hit it and go in. The one you hit, it hit dead center and didn't go in, but it kind of had that rounded lip on the backside, which maybe helped it pop up instead of hitting the lip and going down. So I still say yes, because they were both dead center. Now, if either one of them had been at the same pace off the center of the hole and the flag wasn't in, probably not.
See, the reason I asked that is because both of them were coming downhill because they hit the slope. And Arnold Palmer used to always say, you know, when you're uphill, you could putt more aggressively because the hole slanted like this. So it's almost like shooting basketball with a backboard.
Yeah, yeah,
so you have a backstop, essentially, because it hits the hole, pops back out. And so with both these putts coming downhill with the hole slanted at a, you know, 20-something degree angle, whatever it is, it coming down, you know, it could just graze right over the hole. You know, that hole popping it up, you know, if it doesn't catch that little part of the cup and pop it up, it could roll right over it. So I found that as an interesting take from both of those putts, being the fact that they both left it in and they both made it on extremely long putts. And for me, what I also took from the tournament was I was trying to compare it to what was probably the other most exciting tournament of the year, was the work day with Thomas and Morikawa coming down the stretch. And for me, I think this one was a little bit more dramatic just because of the fact, and obviously JT and Morikawa they're 3 and 5 in the world now, but these guys were 1 and 2 in the world not even just now, at the time of the competition they were 1 and 2 in the world. And if we look back on, besides even the years of when Martin Kaymer and Lee Westwood and Luke Donald were fighting in and out, if they were 1 and 2 in the world and they went into a playoff, that would have been pretty intense stuff.
And
really any time throughout golf. And my dad asked me this question last night. Have 1 and 2 in the world ever gone into a playoff at a tour event? And
oh man, that'd be like Elias Sports Bureau or Justin Ray to look up. And I don't know the answer.
I don't even think
that we could Google and find that. That'd be some sort of like deep stat.
Exactly. It would have to be, because especially with how volatile it gets with the rankings. So someone could be 2-1 week, then the next week they could be 5 just because of whatever. And so you really couldn't have drawn up much of a better finish. And it's just a tale of two weeks. We saw a 30 underscore win a couple weeks or 2 weeks ago at the Northern Trust. I'm going to nail that. And then
nailed it.
And then we see this week where we have 5 players shoot under par at what looked like a U.S. Open setup.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show there are many ways to set up golf courses and there are many different ways to play this game. But the common denominator in both of those was DJ was at the top of the leaderboard. And essentially, he didn't win this event, but he tied. He at worst tied for first in the last 2 events on 2 extremely different setups. Like you were mentioning before, Colby. So his game has to be getting close to where it was late 2016, early 17. I just worry about how long he'll be able to keep it going, because if he allegedly falls down the stairs again, he could lose his game.
Yeah, absolutely. He could.
Or if he switches putters.
Yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal event at the BMW. It was great. It was cool watching these guys grind. It's you know, it was kind of weird because I got the feeling, you know, every year whenever the season ends for these guys, it's kind of sad. Like, yeah, I mean, yesterday was technically it was the last day of Tiger season. And usually that would be really kind of disappointing and depressing for Tiger fans, because we don't know when the next time we're going to see him again. It doesn't have the same feel this year, because we know, like, I'm getting these updates, you know, a couple weeks ago, Jordan Spieth's season is over. Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, these guys' seasons are over. Tiger Woods' season is over. And I'm like, well, yes.
They're playing
in
3 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks from where we sit today on this Monday. So, I don't know, to you, I don't know about to you, but to me, it felt different and kind of weird knowing that these guys' seasons are over, but knowing that, you know, we only have to go to sleep a few more times before we watch these guys tee it up in a major championship, which, again, this fall, basically from the time the PGA Championship, or really basically from the time WGC Memphis started through the Masters, is like the golden era of scheduling for golf, because it's just so much packed into such a short amount of time. It's basically like a regular PGA Tour schedule on cocaine.
It really is. And generally, it's really the tale of 2 years, honestly, Kobe. And it really depends on which year it falls, because for us here living in the United States, the years that have the Ryder Cup is more impactful than when it has the President's Cup. And so,
yes, much more.
So for us Tiger fans playing the Ryder Cup, normally the Ryder Cup's in September, early October-ish, somewhere around there. So we can kind of have a little bit better hint of when some of these guys will play again. But like we saw last year, the President's Cup down at Royal Melbourne was held in December. So all of a sudden, last year, these guys who don't make it through make it onto East Lake Tour Championship, unless they play some of the other, what were the, not fall series, but the start of the year events where, you know, for example, the Safeway, Shriners, CJ Cup, those kinds of things. And then even like the HSBC Champions, which was always played at Shenzhen over in China. And we would always have questions on which players are going over to play that and who's not going to. Tiger hadn't gone over there in quite some time. So yeah, you're exactly right. There had been years where we just didn't know where they were going to play, with the exclusion of the Ryder Cup years, which we were supposed to have that this year. But at the end of the day, the whole COVID thing has pushed everything back. And it not only is it going to make these next few months really good, but besides really December, and even December, we'll have Tiger's term at the Hero Challenge. So we're only going to have about really 2 or 3 weeks of no golf, because right at the start of January, we're going back to Kapalua.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. And so that makes... and even still, some of the events that are played overseas might get some more guys if they're in California this year. So
I mean, we already got one tournament moved to Shadow Creek, top 25, 30 course in the world. Yeah,
a lot of guys are going to play Shadow Creek. A lot of guys.
And like you had mentioned, some of the tournaments talks of moving to Los Angeles Country Club, where they're going to host a major in a couple years.
Or Sherwood,
which is another fabulous course. So we could draw some bigger fields there. So, I mean, not even just for these next few months, but... because a lot of people say the golf season starts at Augusta. A lot of, just the casual golf fan, not like us, kind of starts watching around Augusta, because that's when the majors peak up. So a lot of people don't pay attention to the California swing and the Florida swing, that kind of thing. But for us, we really enjoy those events because, I mean, there's a lot of good players. I mean, we love Torrey Pines. We love Riviera. We love Bay Hill. Normally, the Honda draws a really good field. PGA National is a great tournament. So, I mean, really just the next calendar year of golf from here, as long as we don't have any more hiatuses because of the virus or anything else going on in the world, it's really the best time to be a golf fan.
Yeah, it absolutely is. The only thing better than the PGA Tour schedule over the next calendar year is McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is the absolute best in the business. Jeff McRae, friend of the show, the owner at McRae Roofing, he views your roof like a canvas. His team's sole purpose is to create you a masterpiece of a roof, which brings out the beauty of your home and its surroundings, a beauty that will last for years to come. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000 or visit them online at McRaeRoofing.com. That's McRaeRoofing.com. roofing.com. And again, the number is 405-692-4000. They will get you taken care of. Give them a call or visit the website today. Taylor, we've got number one dad coming in hot. Rory McIlroy, maybe it's because, you know, we had a long break because of COVID or whatever the case is, but was really able to keep it under wraps for a long time that he and his wife, Erica, are expecting a baby girl in a matter of days. Rory said that he's been expecting a phone call. He said, I'm just waiting for a phone call. He said last week he had his phone and it didn't ring. He said this past week, Harry, his caddy, had his phone in his pocket while he was on the course, just in case the phone were to ring and he needed to withdraw from the tournament and get there for the birth of his first child. And Rory said, obviously, if he gets the call and needs to withdraw from the Tour Championship, he is going to do that. He's already said that. And he said, I'm going to play in many more Tour Championships, and it's only going to be the birth of your first child once that trumps anything else. So, I mean, obviously, huge congratulations to Rory. Maybe explains a little bit of why it seems like he hasn't been totally in it since the restart.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
It kind of seemed like his mind has been somewhere else, and I think the reason might be because his mind's been somewhere else because there's a global pandemic going on. He's got a pregnant wife at home, first baby, and he's having to leave her at home by herself while he's going and traveling to these tournaments. I would imagine that's weighed on him pretty heavy. So
I think it explains maybe not everything, but pretty close to it. I mean, just imagine. I mean, you and your wife will have kids eventually. I mean, I couldn't imagine you being away from her for months at a time, and with her being pregnant, you know, with the pandemic going on. I mean, you'd be freaking out. I don't see how any way. I mean, even with me and my, I don't know how I could be away.
I mean, it'd be the only thing you were thinking about most of the day. I mean, obviously, you would try to zone in and focus on the golf. But I mean, if you're on the golf course and you're literally waiting on the phone call, I mean, that's going to be in your head. Rory, and he's tied for the lead through 36 holes, doesn't play well on the weekend. And I get that, you know, if anybody who rostered him in DraftKings or bet on him this week or whatever, it's like, come on, Rory, close on the weekend. But guy's got bigger things going on right now. He's won a lot of golf tournaments. And the most important thing to him right now is the birth of his first child. So first of all, shout out to them for keeping it quiet and keeping their privacy and all that stuff. And congratulations. I hope everything goes well this week. I'd like to see him get in four rounds at East Lake, but if he doesn't, I totally understand why.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, like I said, that's, you know, obviously a lot bigger things, but what we can get into on a previous show, you know, if you're going to try to use Rory and your one and done in your DraftKings for a guy with a field of only 30 players for a guy who might leave because he's going to have his kid, might want to stick away from that. I mean, that's just,
yes.
I mean, even a guy as talented as Rory who has the potential to win, he could leave at any moment. And for us, I think the most famous, you know, situation like this was Phil at the 99 U.S. Open when he was going down with Payne Stewart, and he could have left at any moment if he got the call. No matter if he was in the final group or not, he was going to leave. And Payne Stewart makes the putt, holds him by the head and says, you're going to be a dad. And so you'll have some people say, well, if Phil can finish second in U.S. Open, almost win while thinking about why can't Rory. And I think it really just has to do with the pandemic because he hasn't been able to be around. He's had to be in a bubble. And
right.
Or, I mean, not like an NBA bubble, but he's had to be.
Well, but also it's not just him. It's the fact that he knows that his wife being pregnant, I'm assuming that she's done nothing but sit at the house. And it's got to be driving her crazy because she can't, you know, she can't go out to the movies with friends or just, you know, go hang out with people and get out of the house and just kind of live life because obviously an expecting mother isn't going to go out and take the risk of catching this disease. So I would imagine that it's weighed heavy on him how difficult it's been for her throughout this time.
And you know, we've had some friends over the last few months during this quarantine have children, and we've seen the toll that
it
takes.
Yeah, we had a friend have a baby in June.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, the parents weren't able to be there, you know, having to stay 6 feet away even currently now, you know, because you don't want, I mean, if you want to have better be safe than sorry, I think the health of your child is the number one thing.
Yeah, I think the health of a newborn infant is top of the list.
It's probably top of the list. I don't think anything would trump that. So for her, I mean, you know, who's being able to around and assist her while Rory's gone? And I'm sure that he's worrying about that a lot too, of, you know, who's being around my wife and my child while this is going on. And I truly think it explains a little bit of why he's been in kind of this funk. And I think that we see it a lot of times on the tour when a PGA Tour player wins, all of a sudden they show them to the side, the wife's holding a brand newborn baby, and they all just love on each other because there's just such a, you know, a high feeling from it, because it's like, no matter what happens, I get to go home, this beautiful, my beautiful baby and my beautiful wife, you know. And I think a lot of players feel that way. And once Rory's able to get past this point and he can kind of be with his family, with his kid, I think the golf will start coming around. It's just a matter of, will it be in time for the U.S. Open, or will we have to wait till Augusta, where he kind of already, it might be even a little different this year for Rory, because normally his problem is, because that's the last leg of the Grand Slam for Rory, and normally it's, you know, it used to be PGA Championship, now it's traditionally Open Championship ends, then you have 8 months, and then you have the Masters. So he has to sit 8 months on the fact that he has his last major for the Grand Slam to come up. When this year, it's not the case, because we'll have the U.S. Open less than 2 months before the Masters, or right at it, or whatever it may be. So that could actually play into his advantage. And if so, within these next couple months, I think if he's able to get everything situated with his baby and his wife, and then, like I said, he's going to be in the prep and not have that 8 month hiatus of thinking about, oh, this is when I can get the career Grand Slam. I think I would like Rory's chances a little bit more at the Masters this year than I traditionally do. Even though I've liked him in the past sometimes, it's when you have that last leg of the Grand Slam to complete, and you have to wait that long to think about it, it weighs on your mind, and it's a hard thing to accomplish. And that it goes back to Tiger Slam 2001. How he was able to do that just blows my freaking mind.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on all of that. Should we recap some of our picks from last week? Shall we?
Absolutely.
I think we definitely should because it was a good week for yours truly. Very good week. Why don't we start with the podcast one and done poll, shall we?
Go for it.
So you had, first off, you had about a $1.6 million lead, which has evaporated, and you now trail. Because I had John Rahm and Daniel Berger as my two picks for this past week. So, cool 1.71 from John Rahm, my second winner that I've hit. And then you had Colin Morikawa at the PGA. So you've had one winner. I've had two now. So now we've got a pretty good battle going. We're within a couple hundred thousand of each other. You had Adam Scott. Pardon me, that was last week. You had Harris English and Kevin Kisner.
Yes.
Which
T25, T40, pretty shitty.
Yeah, you got about 104K combined between the two of them.
Yeah, screw them.
Yeah, could be better. Could be better. On the website, I had Tony Finau and Patrick Reed because I forgot to submit my picks last week, and it's a good thing I did because I went from a missed cut with Tony Finau to 385K. From Tony Finau, and then 34K from Patrick Reed. Who'd you have on the website?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Same
English
thing.
English and Kisner?
Yeah.
So, to hell with them?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. and like I said, there's a lot left. So, this next week, I'll save it for the preview show. I'm running out some big dogs this week. So, if we...
I'm running out a big dog this week.
That's singular.
I'm
going plural.
That is singular. Well, on the website, because I've used more golfers. On the podcast pool, I think I probably have more guys available, so I might run out two big dogs there.
That's a good point. I might be able to use some.
But on the website,
different.
I have less guys available, so I think I can only afford to run out one big dog if I still want to have big dogs for the U.S. Open and Masters, which I do.
Nah, you don't need any. Normally first-timers and people who aren't very good normally win those events. But yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, the one-and-done thing, your Rahm pick last week was spectacular. And
had 20 on Rahm at 10-1. First winner I've hit since it's been several weeks since before Memphis. I think I might have hit before Memphis, Bryson, or who won on the heels of Bryson? Because I went that stretch after the restart where I hit like five of the first eight, and I hadn't hit any in about 6-7 weeks. So this is the first one I've hit in a little bit. So good to get back on the winning track.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, like kind of like you're saying, it kind of evens out. But you got five in a row, had a few off weeks there. But I think this is the start of something special for you. So you might as well just let the bank account increase.
One thing, and you can get in this pool if you want to. I was meaning to tell you about it. A buddy of mine runs it. And basically, how many people did we have in there last week? Probably, 15, 20 people, something like that. Everybody puts in $5 for all the non-majors, 10 for the majors. And then that week, you have to pick one American golfer and one international golfer. Can be from any other country. And then at the end of the week, whoever has the lowest total combined score, both your golfers have to make the cut, and the lowest combined score just takes the pot for that week. This week, we didn't have a ton. I think we had 15 in this week. So what's that? $75. And I had Rahm and Matthew Wolf were my two picks for my American and my international guy. Oh, also, it's one and done. So once you've used guys, you can't use them again. So I had Rahm and Matthew Wolf, which got me at a combined even par for the week, and I ran away from the field. Nobody was even close to me. So
there you go.
John Rahm was good to me this week.
Very good, very good. Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully he can keep it going for next week for a non-spoiler alert there. But one thing before we get out of here, Colby, unless you have something else, because we were talking about this before the show, so. One thing you see in a lot of these WGC events that you don't see a lot of times because there's no cut is you occasionally see some pretty high scores come in because, like I said, there's just four rounds. You make a check if you finish no matter what. So, one really good guy out there on the tour, great guy. My girlfriend calls him Teddy Bear.
Teddy Bear.
And he's I like his game. I like his swing. Oh, Mark Leishman shot plus 30 for four rounds, shot 80, 78, 79, shot 73 on the last day to actually keep it that low. And I mean, the scores were obviously super high for everyone this week. So it's not like they were playing extremely hard course, no pitch and putt by any stretch of the imagination. But we were talking about it and we said, has anyone ever shot 30 over in a PGA Tour event? Because normally if you're that many over par, you miss the cut.
Right.
And so
my guess, by the way, was Stephen Bowditch. Was my guess because you remember he won an event, had an exemption, got up kind of high in the world, and then totally lost his golf game and was going out and firing like 83, 84 every week.
And it turns out neither one of us were close. The 30 under got blown away by, and this
by
this,
a record that will never be beaten.
Never be beaten. It's such a fascinating story. So I was just reading up on this. So the only thing I have is the story in front of me is what I'm going off of. So back in 1974, a gentleman by the name of Mike Reeser shot 93 over par at the 1974 Tallahassee Open.
And an event that had a cut.
I did not misspeak. I said 94 over. 94. And so how the hell does that happen? Well, he was even par through two rounds. Like you said, Colby, made the cut. Shot 94 over through two rounds on Saturday, Sunday. How does that happen? This is what happened. After two rounds, he decides to go horseback riding. Well, what happened was he...
good call. Should always go horseback riding in the middle of a tournament.
Let's see. And apparently something spoke the horse and ran right into a tree. Got smoked by a tree, horseback riding after two rounds after he made the cut. So he had torn rib cartilage, damaged knee ligaments, and a separated shoulder. So you would think, hey, I can't play golf. There's no way. You have to withdraw. I mean, you can't even hardly walk probably at this point. Well, so just so happened at this tournament, if you made the cut, you got an exemption into the next week's tournament, which happened to be the Byron Nelson. But the catch was you had to make the cut and finish the tournament. So our man, Mike Reeser here, decided to go out there and swing for 36 holes, one-armed with a 5-iron only, and proceeded to shoot 123, 114 on the weekend to make sure he got his spot into the Byron.
His check for that week.
And a small, you know, back then, 74, the purses weren't near as high, but for them, a great check. Yeah. You know, you might as well
It's all relative.
And you know,
he might be my new hero.
That is the definition of an inspirational story. And for me, you know, it's like, the thought process is, man, if I get torn knee cartridge, torn rib, separated shoulder, I probably shouldn't play golf in 3 days. You know, I might want to take a month or two off, but you're going out there, you're grinding. We've had how many of your players on you? You got to keep going if you're going. And a couple fun facts on here that I was reading on it. He was Arnold Palmer's caddy back at the 66 U.S. Open, which probably doesn't sound like much, but a lot of people have probably heard about Palmer blowing the 7-shot lead with 9 holes to play to Billy Casper. That's a pretty infamous deal there. And he was actually the caddy for Palmer when he did.
You're saying Arnie got attacked by a ghost?
I gosh dang it, Colby, you and your freaking corny jokes.
They always come on Mondays too. It's always the first show of the week.
RIP to both them. Absolutely,
legends, greats of the game.
Absolutely. Billy Casper, most underrated golfer of all time.
And 51 tour wins, right?
I think more than that, but I'll look it up. Reeser, and here's another fun fact about Reeser while Colby's looking that up. And I had always told myself before I met my girlfriend that I wanted to die on a golf course. I just felt like that was my place to be. And my man, Mike Reeser, at the age of 60 in 2002, suffered a heart attack at the Pacific Southwest Section PGA Senior Championship.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, it happened while he was playing and unfortunately passed away later on that day. And so
that's terrible.
It's absolutely horrible. For that to happen when it did is extremely tragic for anyone in his family. Obviously, it's been 18 years now, but to go out on a golf course is pretty legendary. And I think if you were going to go out, that used to be my number one way to go out. But I think right now, since my life changed a little bit, it's still in my top five though.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. 51 tour wins for Billy Casper.
Oh, you nailed it.
Three majors.
You nailed it.
Yep. Couple U.S. Opens and a Masters. And I think he had I'm just looking here. He had to have had another 15 probably top 10s at majors to go along with 51 wins and three major championship victories.
Oh, I mean, and you can look it up,
too.
And
he never gets talked. Why didn't he ever get talked about?
You know why? Because he played in the same time that that Arnie Player and Nicklaus did. Yeah. And you look at it, yeah, I mean, he's seventh all-time in wins. And you go look down on it. He was the leading tour money winner in 1966 and 68. He was PGA Tour Player of the Year in 66 and 68. Won the Varn
Trophy. Those were the 2 years he won his U.S. Opens, I believe. Yeah.
And he won the Varn Trophy 5 years. Varn Trophy is the scoring average, lowest scoring average.
He won his U.S. Opens in 59 and then again in 66, and then he won his Masters in 1970.
So the reason I'm saying all this is because for 5 years, from 1960 to 1968, Billy Casper led the tour in scoring average. And
yep.
Nicklaus, Palmer, Player, Hogan was a little later towards the end.
They were all out there, though.
But they were all out there. And he's out there leading the tour in scoring average. He led the... Yeah, from 63... 63 to 66, three of those 4 years, he led the tour in scoring average.
Random trivia. How many combined strokes did Billy Casper win his three majors by?
Probably two, because he probably won one in a playoff.
One.
So he won two in a playoff and then one by one shot.
He won the 1959 U.S. Open by a stroke, and then he won the 1966 U.S. Open and the 1970 Masters in playoffs.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, and he actually cool. he beat Arnold Palmer at the 66 U.S. Open, and then at the Masters he beat Gene Littler in a playoff, who is another underrated player as well.
Yep. So good stuff. Really quick, last thing, and then we are out of here, I promise. Just give me a temperature gauge on Tiger after this week at BMW. How do we feel? We're obviously not playing at the Tour Championship. He's certainly not going to play at Safeway, so the next time we will see him is at Wingfoot. Just give me a temperature gauge on Tiger.
I am, if one was ice cold and 10 was scorching hot, I would say probably about a 4.
Okay.
Maybe even a little lower, closer to 3.5, just because, like I said, our goal is 19 at this point. I don't see him having a chance at Wingfoot just because of the way the course is set up, and he hasn't been hitting his irons good enough and obviously hasn't been putting good enough.
With his driving and his putting not being better than it is, his irons have to be hit the way they were at Augusta last year and the way they were at Zozo last year. Otherwise, he doesn't have a chance.
Exactly. And so for me, I don't think he's going to be able to get that turned around in 3 weeks' time with no more tournament reps. So I have to throw Wingfoot out. I'm throwing Wingfoot out. Then from there, we don't really know where he'll play at. I mean, with some of the other events being moved over.
He'll probably defend at the Zozo, but we don't know what course.
Don't know where it'll be. And then, so I think in all honesty, we just got to get ready for Augusta and see how it'll be. And what is Augusta, second or third week of November?
Second weekend of November.
Second weekend of November.
12th and 15th or something like that?
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I've never been to Georgia. I know it's a little further south, but here in Oklahoma, the second week of November, it's been fairly cold at times.
It has?
And we talk about it all the time, Tiger's body, is it going to be, can his body hold up in the cold, and is that going to play a factor? And so for me, I think those are the reasons why I'm a little less optimistic than I think you are, Cole, because I think you're leaning a little more towards the hot side than the cold side.
Yeah, the average temperature in Augusta, Georgia in November is a high of 67, low of 47. So
if you get an early tee time,
Well, and that's the average. So, yeah. You know, some days maybe we get super lucky and it's hot this year and it's a high of 78 every day. Maybe we don't and it's a high of 56 every day. No. I mean, because that average is in the middle, so we really won't know until the time comes. But, yeah, not super optimistic with Tiger from what we've seen here lately. But today, August 31st, 2020, he is still the Masters champion.
No doubt.
Because they didn't get to play it this April. So hang on to that jacket, baby.
And he will be for another couple months, too. So we might as well relish in it while we can. And hopefully the chairman or commissioner, whatever. God, what's the guy's name in Augusta?
Is it still Billy Payne? No.
No. Gosh dang it. Oh, my Lord, it's going to drive me nuts.
Mance?
Hopefully he's putting the jacket on Tiger, because if you're the defending champion, the chairman has to put it on you, because the defending champion can't put it on himself.
Why can't we come up with the chairman's name?
Because we're a bunch of freaking idiots.
This is terrible. What is the chairman's name? Anyway, yeah, but the good news is Tiger's the defending Masters champion, and that's the course that we both agree he has the best chance to win majors on for the rest of his career, right?
Fred Ridley.
Yes, Fred Ridley.
Gosh damn it.
So Augusta's the course Tiger has the best chance to win majors on the rest of his career, right?
Of course.
And we'll get to see him play twice there in 6 months.
Yes.
So 5 months? 6 months. 6 months. We'll get to see him play
plus
twice.
5, 6.
At Augusta.
Somewhere.
So he'll have two chances in 6 months to win at Augusta National. In on that, in on our preview show for the Tour Championship, 30 players, lot of money on the line, lot of points on the line. Reminder, call McRae Roofing, 405-692-4000. Visit them online at mcraeroofing.com. We are back later in the week with our Tour Championship preview. Going to have some fun at Eastlake. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We're back later in the week with more 73rd Hole.